Hello, everybody. I'm Hub Arkush, and I'm joined on our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast by longtime NFL and college head coach Dave Wannstedt and college football and NFL Hall of Famer Dan Hampton. And, you know, guys, the NFL college draft takes three full days, and it's impossible to cover the whole event for you in 35 to 45 minutes. So this week, we're just going to focus on which three or four teams appear to have the best drafts this year, and which three or four teams made the most questionable decisions. But one thing we want to talk about before we get to it, it's been a quarterback draft all along. We know that. It's over now. But what happened this weekend, the biggest surprise, obviously, the Penix pick at number 8. And what I was more interested in, and what I've had a lot of people asking me about, is we knew all along what the Bears were going to do with the number one pick. Caleb Williams has been the number one prospect. But what I don't think I've ever seen before is how much work general manager Ryan Poles did with his entire roster this offseason to make it as ready as possible for Caleb Williams to be successful for day one. You know, Dave, you've been doing this a long time. And, you know, teams make major moves during the offseason. But it feels like everything that Ryan Poles has done this offseason is to be sure that Caleb Williams has everything he needs to be successful as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's evident by the guys that are here, Hub. You know, I remember our first year with Troy Aikman. God bless him that he's even, you know, alive now. I mean, he was getting hit a half a dozen to a dozen times a game. And not his fault, but we had no receivers except Michael Irvin, and we had no offensive linemen. So the whole trend has changed, and you're correct with Ryan Poles, but everybody's saying, how can there be this many offensive linemen taken in the first round? That's never happened. And how many receivers taken early? And I think it's to your point, Hub, that everybody now is into this thing of, I got a quarterback, I got a young quarterback, or a veteran quarterback. What can I do to give him the best chance to be successful? You know, what did we say last week? We were talking, and out of the 32 teams, half of them, one half, lost their starting quarterback during the season last year. So I think it's what can we do? Receivers, offensive line, whatever we got to do on offense to give our quarterback a chance to perform well and stay healthy is what we got to do. And that's what the Bears have done.
The thing about this that I think is amazing is, you know, and everything changes over the years. Back when I was, you know, coming out, everybody had certain slotted holes, and they would draft accordingly. But now, it's almost like everyone—you can almost remake a roster in 2 years. But all that being said, this draft that was so centric on quarterback, 6 in the top 12. But if you look at it, one of the two most important, ingredients of an offense that facilitate great quarterback play, other than offensive tackle to protect and a wide receiver. And I don't know if anybody knows this, but in these first four rounds of the draft, there were 50 offensive tackles and wide receivers taken. Think about that. And so, yes, everybody's, you know, desperately seeking the elite quarterback, but it's almost like everyone's kind of getting a whiff of it and realizing it takes more than that. And once the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, decided to rebuild an offensive line, protect their quarterback, they got by with, you know, less than greatness on the outside. But I think that, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do league. Everybody sees what works and how it had a certain great, you know, impact and value. They're going to emulate that. And, you know, with all these young quarterbacks, yeah, hey, you might as well start now because you don't want to get them beat up.
You know, guys, over the next 10 weeks, we're going to cover all 32 teams off seasons for you, but we just don't have the time to do them all today. So this week, we'll do the top three or four teams drafts and what are ranked as possibly the bottom three or four. And we've used, of course, first our Pro Football Weekly list because we started covering this draft 10 years before anybody else 45 years ago. But I've also gone to the five, I believe, top experts to get their evaluations. And we've come to some pretty universal agreement that the best drafts over the weekend probably were the Eagles, the Steelers, the Bears, and the Vikings, and that the teams that maybe accomplished the least would be the Falcons and the Browns and the Cowboys. So let's start with the Eagles. After a somewhat shocking and totally disappointing end to the 23 season, All the experts are raving about what the Eagles have done to try and fix things. General manager Howie Roseman is one of the most respected and admired GMs in the league and one of the best drafters, and people around the league are raving about his draft this year. Philly's biggest problem was on defense last year, particularly pass D, where they ranked 28th in the league, and they were just -7 in turnover takeaway with just 17 takeaways. So what does Roseman do? With his first two picks at 22 and 40, he got PFW's two best-rated cornerbacks in Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. And Dave, you know, I think it's a great start. I'd never second-guess Howie Roseman's drafts, but this one, at least on the face of it, appears to have even more promise than many that he's done.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty obvious that they had the pass rush going last year, and they needed help on the back end. You know, two or three of those secondary guys. Now, you do have Ringo, the young kid from last year, the one corner. So Mitchell will go in there, and it'll be two young corners. And, you know, Vic Fangio's the new defensive coordinator. We all know Vic well from his days in Chicago and around the league. And he already has put in our man Cooper DeJean at starting nickelback. And I'm told that the reason is everybody's – and you might say, oh, nickel doesn't play that much. Well, let me tell you, in today's NFL, a nickelback's playing about 75% of the snaps. And nickelback's got to be able to – play the run. If they run it, you got to gap like a linebacker. If they pass it, you got to be able to cover, and you got to be a smart guy. So that's where Cooper's going to line up and start, and we'll see how it goes. But I agree with you. I mean, I like what Philadelphia has done, and I look for A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. Those guys aren't going to stay down 2 years in a row. They'll be back.
Obviously, Vic Fangio has a lot of supporters here in Chicago. As Coach said, he put together a pretty impressive defense in a relatively short amount of time. And you would have to think, at his age, he had some assurances that he was going to be able to replenish the defensive backfield when he decided to take this job. That being said, Cooper DeJean, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. To me, I mean, he reminds me so much of the Minnesota Viking safety that from Notre Dame. I can't remember his name. I'm drawing a blank. But exactly, Harrison. That he's able to pretty much, you know, take away tight ends by, you know, himself, and also he would have, you know, a lot of range and a huge factor as far as coming off the corner in the blitz, because Fangio likes to be very aggressive a lot of times, bring in the nickel or even the weak corner. So it'll be fun to watch how he puts this all together.
You know, folks, another team, I hope the Eagles fans are happy, and I think the Steelers fans are about to be happy, too, because they're next on our list. And again, we're not ranking these 1, 2, and 3. We're just saying they're the three of the top 5 or 6 that most of the experts have been impressed by. And the Steelers general manager, Omar Khan, has been busy all offseason trying to address his quarterback issue by trading Kenny Pickett and signing Russell Wilson and trading for Justin Fields. While it's less than 50-50 that either Wilson or Fields will be there after this year, unless Wilson has a big bounce-back campaign, Khan didn't draft a quarterback, but he still invested heavily in his offensive line and all three levels of his defense. Dan, the Steelers are a playoff team coming into the season. If this draft is as good as many smart people think they could possibly become a legitimate contender. Do you think they make that big a leap this offseason?
I think so. And, you know, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, Russell Wilson, he's kind of defied, you know, his boundaries. And obviously he's a Super Bowl winner. He's, you know, obviously been very successful. It was oil and water in Denver. He and Sean Payton did not have any semblance of, you know, cohesion. And obviously that, I think that's why we saw, you know, the move getting rid of him. But you know, and Coach, you and I, at the end of last season, we would, you know, kind of look at some of the numbers, but you got to think that, you know, he wasn't that bad last year, Russell Wilson, and now getting better protection with a rebuilt offensive line. Obviously, the defense in Pittsburgh is always, you know, the goods. I could see Pittsburgh really bounce back, and everybody loves playing for Tomlin. And you know that Russell Wilson doesn't want to go out, you know, being kind of run out of town. So this will be pretty exciting watching how he responds.
I'm glad that I got a chance to say it because I love the Eagles, but this is my team. And no one wants to give the Steelers credit. My first tackle, if I was going to draft a tackle, I was going to take Troy Fanonu, the big kid from Washington who the Steelers took. He is the best foot athlete. This guy is, he will hit you. He can play guard. He's a true left tackle athletically. I liked him more than any of those offensive tackles, my preference. I would have taken him. And then Zach Frazier, the center out of West Virginia, I hate to say it, I watched him just wear my Pitt Panthers out a couple years in a row. And this guy is a mean guy. This guy is a state heavyweight champion and wrestler. I put him in there, and he's going to fall right in line, and I wouldn't look back. I mean, you got two starters. And then you know who my top linebacker was? And everybody liked the guy, and I did too at Texas A&M. But my favorite linebacker was Peyton Wilson from North Carolina State. And guess who got him? The Steelers. I describe him as Jack Lambert. And Pittsburgh. This guy is – you know who he reminds me of exactly? The Campbell from Detroit, from Iowa. Yeah, the linebacker, Campbell. This guy will – he's not going to play on the edge. He's not going to be out there covering wide receivers. But you put him in the middle, this guy will make every – I love this guy. And then lastly, this guy got overlooked. This could be the steal of the Steelers draft. Roman Wilson, wide receiver from Michigan. He got – I think he's getting slighted, guys, just because in Jim Harbaugh's offense, they didn't have to throw it. It was a run, run, run. And he runs 4.3. He had a great Senior Bowl. This is four draft picks that are impact players day one.
Dave, I'm really glad you brought up Roman. And it has nothing to do with me going to Michigan. I can promise you that. It has. Well, it does in the fact that I watch all the games. And so I've seen every game he's played there. But I didn't have him in the first or second round. It's a wide receiver draft. He's probably the, I don't know, eighth or ninth best wide receiver prospect in the draft. But to get him at number 84, he is a touchdown waiting to happen. Whenever J.J. McCarthy needed a play that was going to make a difference in the game, he went to Wilson, and almost every time Wilson, you know, developed. So I'm not suggesting that he's going to be a Pro Bowl wide receiver or anything like that, but he is a big play waiting to happen. He is also one of only six of the top 14 offensive tackles taken, wide receivers taken, that is under 6 feet tall. And that's another reason that he lasted a bit, but that's a pretty good pick. And now we go with number three, and we have to move on to a team. Dave, you know, Dan, you guys know, we all have significant connections to the Chicago Bears, but this isn't just us talking. This is pretty much every draft expert commenting that has the Bears having one of this year's top drafts, even though they only had five picks. And of course, having the first and ninth picks in the first round helps, but you still have to take the best prospects. And Caleb Williams is pretty near a unanimous number one overall prospect in this draft. And Rome Odunze is a unanimous top three wide receiver prospect and a top seven overall prospect that the Bears still get at nine, which is a big plus. The excitement around the Bears draft is being fueled by the excellent offseason they've had in free agency and with trades, but they also got a unique pick in the fourth round, with many calling Torrey Taylor the best college punter ever. Now, I'll tell you guys, I don't use a fourth round pick on a punter, and I'm nothing against Torrey Taylor. I believe he may be the best. It may turn out to be a great pick. That's not what I would have done, but a lot of people are raving about that too. And Dave, it seems to me that when Ryan Poles is drafting a punter in the fourth round, it's pretty obvious he's feeling pretty good about where his rebuild is at. What do you think of what the Bears have done in the draft this offseason?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I love the punter. This kid, you know, I do Big Ten football, guys, and I'm watching this kid. He had 32 punts that inside the 20. You know how many were fair caught? 29 of them. This guy's got a 4.6 hang time. I mean, as a defensive head coach, any time that you can punt that ball and we can go out and start defense inside the 10, that means points for our offense because we'll stop them. Offensive coordinators get conservative. It changes the whole game plan if you can back them up there. I've been there. I've done it. You know, the other guy I'm kind of intrigued with is Austin Booker, the guy they took from Kansas. You know, this is a real interesting story for our listeners. This kid came out. He was a wide receiver, a defensive back. and in high school, just kind of a nobody. And he went to Cornell University. And then he left Cornell. He had no scholarship. He's a smart guy. So then he leaves Cornell, and he ends up at Kansas, and he still is undersized. But I tell you what, you put the tape on, this guy is a playmaking fool. Now, these are the type of guys, when we were at Dallas and the University of Miami, everywhere I coached, Bears, Dolphins, that we would take. Undersized, fast, athletic defensive ends, and Richard Dent types, and turn them loose. So I kind of think this guy could be sneaky here in the future.
Well, and obviously you guys had a lot of success. Jason Taylor.
Yeah, same guy, yep.
There you go. The part about this draft that we had a chance to visit with it, but I think it's important to kind of lay this out. Obviously, everyone on planet Earth knew Caleb Williams was the best player, best quarterback. He would be the first overall pick. We all know that. Okay, now, how important is it that he finds – you know, a nice little receptive home to kind of start his NFL career. We've seen a lot of teams that would have the first overall draft pick, and they were pretty much unprepared with talent, skills, schematics, all these different things. And it really, you know, it was a devastating impact to that quarterback. I think the Bears, and you may have mentioned this earlier, Hub, clearing the decks, getting rid of Justin Fields, picking up a number of free agents on the offense. Obviously, the addition of DJ Moore last year. Now, Keenan Allen, which was essentially the fourth-round pick the Bears traded for him. So all of these things are, you know, kind of like a perfect alignment. But the one part about this that I think is extraordinary is the ninth player taken in the first round was also by the Bears, and it's Rome Odunze, this receiver that I know, Coach, you're over the moon with him. I am too. You know, I've just heard blurbs of different things that he remembers, you know, working on the dairy farm with his grandpa, and they wouldn't eat breakfast until everything, all the chores are done. I've heard stories of him, you know, running the cone drill time after time after time. Nobody's there. Nobody's watching. Nobody's timing. But he wanted to get better at it. All these different aspects of what this kid, Odunze, brings to the table, guess what it's going to affect? It's going to affect Caleb Williams because they're very similar. You know, Caleb isn't like the king and he can tell everybody what to do and he's the big shot and the big star and all that. No, guess what? He and Odunze are going to essentially kind of be in a battle for the next 10 years, hopefully, of being the lead dog, the captain of the offense. And I think it's only going to be, you know, good news, good medicine for Caleb Williams, because we all heard, you know, the last 5 months that, you know, he was doing this. He had a pink phone. He was painting his fingernails. He was doing, you know, trust me. You have Rome Odunze around, all that crap's going to cease.
You know, guys, the one other team, we don't have time to go deep on them, but I can't leave them out. But the Minnesota Vikings had a very similar draft to the Bears in what they did in getting, you know, two players of greatest need, including J.J. McCarthy, a quarterback, without giving up hardly anything. And when people forget that the Vikings won the division in 22. And if the quarterback doesn't get hurt, and what was it, week five, they may have won it again last year. And now they're coming back healthy. Now, not nearly as pleasant or as much fun to talk about the teams that appear to have done poorly in the draft. And while it may not be pleasant, it is our job to report both sides of every story. So now we're going to get into the Falcons, the Browns, and the Cowboys. They've all been far more criticized than complimented for their work in the last week. And much as Caleb Williams was a slam dunk number one prospect among players in the draft, the Falcons are a lock for the number one pick among experts for getting much less than they could have with the picks that they had. Michael Penix Jr. was a first round pick on some experts' draft boards, but no higher than maybe 25th to 30th, and more than a few had him going in round two. Nobody had him going as high as 8th overall. No one had the Falcons drafting a quarterback at all before day 3, and the Falcons almost definitely could have traded the 8th pick down into the 20s, gotten multiple high picks for the trade, and they still could have taken Penix. The rest of Falcons' picks aren't that bad. or that good, but there is unanimous consent. They really screwed up with what they did with the eighth pick. What are you hearing and thinking about it?
Yeah, I think you kind of put it there, Hub. I don't know what they're thinking. That's the one that's a shocker. You know, one of the negatives, and a lot of people had Penix. I mean, now that it's over, people were kind of divulging how they had these quarterbacks ranked. And J.J. McCarthy, we talked about him earlier, he was actually a lot higher than I thought. You were saying a lot of people had him number two. That was being confirmed to me by two or three GMs. They had him second on the board. A lot of people had Penix up there. But the only thing they said about Penix, he had two knee surgeries, okay, and you were going to be 24 years old when you started. Well, now you're going to have him behind Kirk Cousins for 2 years. And the other thing I don't like about that, and let me just say this, and I've been there. Every time Kirk Cousins throws an incomplete pass, who's the most popular guy on the team? We've all heard this crap. It's your backup quarterback. And I think this really makes it tough on Kirk Cousins. I really do. That now you got two guys in the locker room, and how about just personalities? All of a sudden, you know, these guys like Penix and these guys like Cousins. Coaches start getting – the GM drafted them. You know what I mean? It's not good. It is not good. I don't care how you cut it. And, you know, you better try to find somebody and try to get your money back and move on.
I you know, I've seen this happen over time in the NFL where almost a general manager goes crazy and defies all logic and makes a signature move like this, thinking they're going to be, you know, giving great accolades for it. But this reminds me of Ryan Pace with the Bears years ago. You know, he trades up. He signs Mike Glennon from Tampa Bay for $26 million a year. And then he goes out and moves up and gives away two number one draft picks to get Mitchell Trubisky. And then now you've got just a stink bomb brewing in the locker room. And then you look at what the Falcons did. They went out and they signed Kirk Cousins, and I am no Kirk Cousins fan. He's a better player than what I estimate him, his value is. But all that being said, they paid him a fortune, $180 million, $100 guaranteed over the next 2 years. And then you go and you reach, and I mean, it is a reach. If you don't think it's a reach, Coach, you just talked about the two knee surgeries of the last, you know, 3-4 years, and go back and look at the tape against Michigan in the title game. If anybody choked, he choked. I'm sorry. It was bad. And now you're going to throw him into that room, and half the team's going to want Kirk Cousins. Half the players are going to want, you know, the rookie, and the receiver's going to say, oh, he can throw the deep ball. I mean, it's going to be chaos. All I can tell you is Terry Fontenot, the GM, he may have just signed his death warrant with this one.
You know, guys, the one thing I have to add here is I've been feeling really bad the last couple of days for Michael Penix, because now on one hand, going eighth instead of 25th just got him an extra $8 to $10 million on his first contract. So that's not a bad thing. But he's hearing everything that we're all hearing, and he is not a bad prospect. He is a legit quarterback prospect in the NFL. I had him going late in the first round. We're not criticizing him. We're criticizing the Falcons for what they did in getting him and the problem that they've created. And I hope we're wrong. You know, I hope it works out for both Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix. But it was just such an unexpected and strange pick. And that's why, you know, everybody right now is talking about two drafts, the Falcons and the Bears. And Penix is going to be hearing about this for the next couple of years. Let me add, by the way, Kirk Cousins did just sign a $180 million contract. But only the first 2 years of it are guaranteed. And in 2 years, he is going to be 38 years old. So it's not like the Falcons made a bad pick. It's what they paid for it, you know, and what they gave up that they could have gotten an extra by not taking him or by taking him a little later that makes it so questionable. So let's move on to our final team. The Cleveland Browns are getting beat up pretty bad for what they did in this year's draft. They started well behind the curve with no first round pick, and their first pick not coming until 54th. Made it tough to have a good draft. They also didn't have a fourth round pick, and most of the players they took were ranked pretty much right at or below where they took them. That, after their first two picks at 54 and 85, they didn't get another pick until 157, and their last three picks were 206, 227, and 243. Certainly, that didn't help either. They just didn't have enough tools, you know, to really do well in this draft. Their most interesting pick is Zach Sinner in the third round. He probably would have gone in the second round and maybe even later in the first if he hadn't undergone a serious leg injury in the final regular season game of the year that required immediate surgery, and it kept him out of all the pre-draft workouts. Now, you know, once again, I'm not saying Sinner is a sure thing, but it's the one pick where they did get value, and most of the experts don't just rank Cleveland's choices as high as they took them. So, you know, I'm just wondering now, Dan, what are your thoughts on the Browns draft and where they're at right now?
Well, and again, you mentioned all the, you know, riffraff picks that the Browns were forced into. Why was that? Oh, that's right, Deshaun Watson. That's right. And what happened? How did he play that? Well, he played dead. Nick Chubb was, you know, he was injured. The Cleveland Browns, you know, they go down to Houston and get humiliated in the playoffs. If any franchise needed to bolster their roster, to have maybe, you know, some new blood and a new direction, it was the Browns. And other than a defensive lineman, I don't think they get any help at all, Coach.
Yeah, and the defensive lineman, I'm not excited about. Mike Hall Jr. out of Ohio State, he's undersized. What he is a good athlete. The production was not there for me. I wasn't a fan of his. I mean, he should have been drafted, not in the second round. I mean, that to me, that was a real reach right there. And then you talked about the guard from Michigan, you know, who was hurt. I mean, God, it's sometimes it makes you wonder, really. But I don't know how much help they're going to get from these guys instantly. You know, old Coach Stefanski there, he's going to have to do another magical coaching job like he did last year, because I don't know how much help they're going to get out of their draft.
You know, guys, I apologize. I said the Browns were last, but we do have one more team to cover, and I'm particularly interested to hear what Dave has to say about these guys. But the Cowboys are not being evaluated very well either. And, you know, they do have some salary cap issues. They have lost some key players in free agency, and they have to make a decision on a new mega contract for Dak Prescott or find a new quarterback after this season. So there's a lot going on there. And Jerry Jones remains the face, voice, and final word on everything Cowboys, including players. And he seems to be slowing down a bit as he ages. He's definitely approached this offseason differently than he usually has in the past. And it's left a lot of evaluators uncertain about where the Cowboys are at right now and where they're heading. Dave, you know Jones pretty well, better than any of us, and how he runs this team. You know, you've been following it, I know, closely, even though you're not involved in it anymore. What are you hearing, and where do you think about where they're at right now and how they did in this draft?
Well, there was a lot of fallout at the end of the year to make changes, Dak or McCarthy or somebody. And Jerry came out with his statement of saying, we're going to stay where we're at and we're going to play it out. We're one play away from getting to the championship game or whatever he said. Knowing Jerry, he's giving everybody enough rope to hang himself. He's given McCarthy an opportunity to hang himself. He's given Dak. They're not given a lot of help. And knowing Jerry, he's probably got a backup plan ready to go in his mind. And, you know, I hate to even bring this crap up with coaches, with Belichick and all the rumors out there, but it's really not fair. When he didn't sign a running back last year, that was enough for me. And then everyone talks about no running back value. What about Jahmyr Gibbs? Okay? I mean, if Detroit's not where they're at without Gibbs. Okay? So, and then the Cowboys don't do anything in the draft, really, with much. And then they sign Zeke back just today. Zeke's back with Dallas. I mean, what are we talking about here? So, I think Jerry's just letting it ride out, and he's giving everybody a lot of rope. We'll see what happens.
I think that's an excellent way of analyzing this. And there were maybe five games last year that the Cowboys looked as well-coached, as talented as any team in football. But then there was another 10 or 12 where they looked bad. When they went to Arizona and got their pants pulled down, that was one thing. And for McCarthy not really to make any kind of major adjustments as far as schematics or, you know, team attitude, all those things. And then they kind of let it, you know, rock along. And then they get into the playoffs. And to see the Green Bay Packers come down there and Jordan Love, essentially, you know, an unproven commodity at, you know, as far as being a playoff quarterback, to almost have a perfect game, and the big Dallas defense had virtually nothing to do with stopping them, and Dak Prescott looked so bad. I got to tell you, I don't think it's going to take a whole lot of rope for this bunch to hang themselves. I'm looking for tough times ahead in Big D.
Well, guys, we've got one more quick topic we should comment on. And I think this one's important because you two know so much more about it than I do or any of our listeners. And Dan, I'm going to start with you this time. The draft, it's going to be at least a year, probably two, before we can give any meaningful grades on these drafts. But what we know is that, or what we don't know, is how long it's going to take these rookies to become NFL players. They're all great college players. Some come in well ahead of others, and no rookie comes into the NFL game ready to be at their best in their first game as a pro. So, Dan, how long did it take you with the Bears to fully develop into the Hall of Fame player you became?
Well, obviously, the first year, two, three, all of that, you should have a steady crescendo. But after the first month or so, I really had a good feel about what I had to do to be successful. Now, I think the gap between college and pros is smaller today than it was back 20, 30 years ago that Coach and I were, came out and played in the NFL. That being said, the level of coaching and some of the Power Five schools is tremendous. And I just looked at some of the numbers. The SEC led all conferences with 60 kids drafted. Then the Pac-12 at 43. Big Ten had 42. ACC, 41. The Big 12, 31. And overall, 217. So if you look at all of these numbers, yeah, not all 254 players, whatever, are going to make impacts this year. But I got to tell you, there is a small margin between, expectations and reality to some of these players. And I remember, again, C.J. Stroud, he bent, the curve with his performance last year. You look at Jahmyr Gibbs, you mentioned him earlier, Coach. How much of a factor, how much of an impact a lot of these rookies can bring? And it's the same way on the defensive line. It's the same way of the offensive line. The Bears had a first-round pick virtually play every snap of the season and graded out as well or better than any of the other veterans. So I think I really believe every year it gets closer and closer. It's not the big step up it used to be. What do you think, Coach?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the NFL's adopted a lot of the, just like Hamp said, a lot of the passing game philosophies that college has started with it, the RPO, run pass option. Now it's being done in the NFL. It came from college. So, I think the gap is closed. They're hiring younger coaches. There's a bigger transition now with coaches. Biggest turnover. So I think philosophies and coaching and ideas, it's closer now than what it's ever been.
Well, guys, we are out of time for this week. I want to do one thing, though, that I've been meaning to do the last couple of weeks. I want to give you all my email address. It's hubarkush@yahoo.com. And if you want to reach out to me and let me know what you'd like to know or what we may not be covering that would be helpful, feel free to email me. We will definitely get back to you with answers to any questions or thoughts you might have, because that's why we're doing this podcast. We're doing it because Dave and Dan and I could do one of these every day. We just love talking about football. But we're also doing it to try and give you the advantage of what we may or may not have learned over the last 30 to 40 years that we've been doing this. So please reach out to us and let us know how you feel about the podcast or anything else you'd like us to cover. We're going to take pretty much the rest of this week off now. The draft can knock you out, but we will be back again next week, and we really appreciate all of you being with us, and we look forward to talking to you then.